G'day, Groovers. As you would know, this is part two of a conversation that we started yesterday here on The U Project with the lovely, amazing and insightful Anna Feringa. Here we go. I think one of the challenges is right now, you know, for every, like, we have listeners all over the world, and it's not just us. In fact, we're relatively privileged in Australia and relatively got it easy, depending on who else we're talking about, of course. But
absolutely.
And also, there are lots of people suffering in Australia too. But all around the world, we're seeing. But, you know, for me, I was talking to somebody yesterday, and a dude who's struggling with some stuff, and he just went through, listed a whole lot of things that he's struggling about with. And I empathized, totally understood. And I said, there were three main things. And I said, what can you control about those three things? And the answer was nothing. The answer was nothing in terms of the things themselves. And I said, well, so you, like, let's go, for example, I can't control, we can't, one of them was the lockdown, which I understand. Of some people, it's like, ah. For other people, it's like, this is completely destroying my life. And I understand there's a very big scale of impact. Recognize that, acknowledge that. And but I can't change when we come out of lockdown, and neither can he. So we're talking about that, and I said, but what can you change in regard to your behavior around that, or what you focus on, or where your energy is, or what you do every day? And my belief is that, my observation is, especially on, well, maybe not especially on social media, but I think social media, the platforms, are just the magnifying glass for what's going on in society anyway, with a lot of people, not all people, but where we just see a lot of people investing a huge amount of energy and anger and emotion, understandable, but in shit that they ultimately can't change. Whereas what I can change is what I do today, what I eat today, how I talk to people today, how I manage my energy today, what I do with my ability and time and talent and skill and love and energy today. I can manage all of that. I can choose whether or not I sit and watch 3 hours of bullshit on television and go down an emotional and psychological rabbit hole and end up anxious. And because no one's pointing a gun to my head while I'm sitting there, I could have done a 3-hour walk, even legally now in Melbourne. Like, there's so much shit that I can do to make me better.
Yeah.
And we're not pretending that the lockdown has no effect. We're not pretending that. We're not pretending that things are good, because they surely aren't. They're hard. They're messy. They're uncertain. For some people, they're fucking tragic and life-destroying and soul-destroying. Mm-hmm. I get all of that. Then you go, all right, let's acknowledge what is, and now let's step back and go, all right, me, what can I do? Because I am not that, and that is not me. That's the macro. I'm the micro. What can I do in the middle of all of those things that I can't control? What can I personally do to make me better, to make today a better day than yesterday? And I feel like some people are so swept up and are in the emotion and the anger and the this and the that, that while it's all understandable, they are definitely not helping themselves.
No. And that absolutely draws back to how we opened the podcast today. And that is, we quite often aren't proactive in the complex.
Yeah.
Right? Whether it's mental health, whether it's physical health, whether it's a pandemic. And so, I mean, what you're talking about, and I don't mean to use big scientific words, but we're talking about a human's locus of control, right? And what that means for our listeners is, do you choose to think above the line today or below the line? Because there's always two ways to look at something. And I'll tell you a little story, right? 10 weeks ago, I lost my grandfather, okay? He was the most important male in my life. I don't have a father figure. And he was like losing a dad, right? I had to hook it back from Perth. I was in the middle of a conference in Perth, had to hook it back. And we were racing against time because all the COVID shit was flying around and we knew lockdown was coming. And it was the 17th of June that he passed, and I was in Perth and we had to hook it back. and get up to where we're living to get a funeral process before lockdown.
Right.
So grieving's been delayed and all that sort of stuff, right? And it's amazing, you know, there's so many ways that, you know, and it sucks. You know, I miss him. Like any human would miss someone that they've lost, that they love, right? Every day. But I'm watching, I could have a choice, right? I could go, okay, I am going to be depressed. I'm going to hate the world. Why did he have to die of an instant heart attack? I wish that we had warning that he was going to go. He was fit as a fiddle. He was dropping off the papers to all the other people in the aged care facility. He was rocking it, right? And then he just went, boom. And, you know, and it was a shock. And then, you know, I'm watching other members in and around me look at it in a really negative way. And I'm like, okay, I do miss the old bastard. Of course, he was the light of my life, but he went out the way he wanted to. He went out in a way with dignity, and he was kind of done anyway. He's kind of done everything. And he used to always say, you know, I don't mind when my time comes. I feel like I've had a good life. And they're the three pieces where I go above the line, and geez, they help me cope.
Yes.
As opposed to, I miss him. Why that? Why me? I've got all this other shit happening in my life. Now I have to lose my grandfather. Now I can go there. And you know what? I do go there sometimes. It's not about just living above the line. It's about your choice about where you decide to spend most of your time, your mind real estate, because that's going to guide your day. It doesn't matter whether you've lost a loved one, you're living in a pandemic. It's all about how you look at it. You're right. You've got to control your day, Harps. You can't let your day control you.
Wow. God bless him. What was his name?
Arthur.
Arthur. Fuck. But you know what? As you were telling that story, this is a weird thing to say, but the best bit, in inverted commas, is that, like, he didn't have some long extended illness where he was lying in a bed being fed by someone and couldn't, you know what I mean? It's like...
No, he always said, Annie, I don't want anyone. I don't want to go out with anyone wiping my ass.
Yeah. Well, he didn't. How old was he?
He was 89.
Oh, good for him.
Yep, 89.
Good for him.
You know, and I like telling that story because people will often throw you challenges, Harps, right? They're like, okay, it's always good to think positive, but what if I lose a loved one? Well, it's inevitable. We're all going to lose loved ones.
Yeah.
And if you're okay, it's okay to sit with your emotion. I'm not saying I didn't grieve. Mate, I grieved the shit out of it. And, you know, I did all the normal thing, but I chose how long I was going to live in that grief. It doesn't take the pain away. It just makes life a bit easier to get to crack on and get things done. And that's a conscious choice. Now, how can we get that message out to people that don't believe that they're in that much of control of their own mind and body? That's a pretty serious thing to happen. And like there's a bunch of our listeners that would have been through similar, if not worse, bits and pieces, right? But if you want to get on and have a relatively palatable life, live, not exist, we're going to be faced with challenges. But how often are you spending your time below that line?
You know what I love? I love all of that, and God bless him. But I love that. You just said, I still feel, you know, you're still grieving, you still feel shit at times.
100%.
Right? But what I love is that this ability that we humans have to go, all right, so I feel shit, I feel sad, I'm in emotional pain and I'm grieving, but nonetheless, I'm not going to sit on the couch for the next 4 months, right? I still have the ability to go and do stuff and work out or go and give someone a hug or talk about how I feel or create or produce, or I'm not going to, I choose not to sit here and feel sorry for myself. I'm not going to pretend I'm not sad. I'm not going to pretend I'm not grieving. I'm not deluding myself, because grief just happens. You have no fucking choice in whether or not you're going to grieve. It's not like you're turning on and off emotions. No, they're turning you on and off, right? So that emotion's going to happen, right? And we can influence it, I think. But in terms of thinking and psychology and subsequent behavior and then subsequent outcomes on a practical level, yeah, that is the thing. And I think this is one of the key and core messages of what we're going through now, is to go, yeah, this is shit. And yeah, I'm a bit sad too. And I'm a bit, you know, I live by myself. I've had virtually nobody in my house for a year and a half. And a year and a half. and I live alone. And I'm, you know, I'm fine. I can do what I do, but I don't love it. I don't love it. I don't love having zero interaction with humans. I don't love it that my parents are 82 and I can't drive down and see them and I'm their only child, and or I can, but you've got to jump through 57 hoops and it makes my mum so anxious because what if the police this and that? And it's just, but you just go, it is what it is, you know? And so I ring them as often as I can and make them laugh and be a dickhead and tell them I love them. And, you know, I control my controllables, but it's liberating in a way to realize that you can be sad. You can be grieving. You can even be anxious. We understand it all. That doesn't need to determine you. It will influence you. It will, at times it will fuck up your day, and we get it. Hey, I wanted to ask you, that's a really powerful idea. I wanted to ask you your thoughts. I want to change tack on something that isn't directly in your wheelhouse, but I'm just talking to you as someone who has, it's in kind of in your wheelhouse, but
as Uncle
so Frank. the other night when I spoke to Hewlett-Packard, I don't know if you've ever had this, but I'll give you a little insider secret, everyone, a little behind the curtain secret. So since I was 26 or 7, a company would ring me or ring my agent or in these days ring Melissa, and they'd say, can Craig do a workshop on such and such? And they could say fucking nuclear fusion and I'll go, yep. Doesn't matter what they ask, yep. Could Craig do a workshop on meaning a lot? Yep. Could he talk about, you know, life after death? Yep. Could he talk about fucking being a pastry chef? Yep. Doesn't matter, right? I always say yes, and then I figure out what the fuck I'm going to talk about, right? As long as it's hopefully in the human behavior kind of space. So Hewlett-Packard, they're like, we want you to do a 1.5-hour workshop on happiness. I'm like, yep. And, of course, I talk about happiness, and we intersect with the idea quite a bit. But to actually talk about one single thing, one component of a very specific component of the human experience. After I said, yep, then I went, okay, am I going to talk about that for an hour and a half? Because there's all my kind of go-tos are off the table. All the kind of Craig stuff. It's, yeah, but I mean, I could do a solid 7 minutes, but fuck, after that, I'm not sure, right? But then I sat down, I literally sat down a week before the gig with one of these, which I'm holding up to Anna, a spiral book pad. And I just brainstormed. And I ended up having a day's worth of shit to talk about because there are so many variables around, so many things that influence, and then so many interesting things to think about. And I just want to get your thoughts on this. So one of the things that occurred to me, and I did a podcast on this recently on happiness, so I don't want to flog a dead horse, but was that happiness is a really slippery construct because even when you ask 10 people what that means, invariably they will say something like, oh, you know, playing with the kids. I go, no, that's what leads to happiness for you, perhaps. But what is happiness? Oh, lying on the door on the floor with my German Shepherd. No, or being in nature. Oh, yeah, but that's where you find it. But what is it? Like, forget how it happens or what's the mechanism to it. What actually is happiness for you? And then the answers, and this is what I started with the other night. I asked them, and they obviously I couldn't see them, but they could type answers. By the way, never do that when you got hundreds and hundreds of people because they're just fucking answers flying up the screen.
I know, you're going to be Rain Man, right?
I'm like, there's no way I can read these fucking answers because there was like 30 answers every 10 seconds. So that was a stupid idea. But anyway, so my first question was, when, in what kind of situation or circumstance are you the happiest? And that was interesting. And that was sometimes, you know, meditation or being with my kids or in nature or whatever. And the next one is, what does happiness mean to you? What does it mean to you, Anna Feringa? What is What does happiness mean to you? Forget you, the psychologist, you, the fucking expert, but like for you, just as a human. All right, let me ask you the easy question first. When are you the happiest? What do you associate, like what is happening on planet you when you are happy?
At my happiest.
Yeah, like when, or just produces the happiness experience for you.
Well, I mean, I can't say a beer at the pub, can I?
Well, you can. Why not? Because it's not about the beer. It's about the social. It's about that totality of that moment.
Well, I'm the extrovert, right? I like to see a bunch of happy people in one place. I love to have a beer. I love to spend time with my mates, right? But on the flip side, one of the most, and this is going to sound like a bit of a plug, and it's absolutely not, right? But one of my happiest places, and I dead set mean this to the core of my soul, is when I get to see a bunch of people nodding their heads when I say something that I know is going to help them. That feeling is irreplaceable. It is high value for me because I feel good. I feel worthy. I feel comfortable. I feel important. And I also know the thought of being able to help other people is one of the most, yeah, and it's got nothing to do with being center of attention. It's got nothing to do with being on a stage. It's about the absolute honor of people taking my concepts and information and actually having it land for humans. Again, sort of dialing back to the beginning there, Harps. But Anna Feringa is Anna Feringa, the non-worker, is definitely when I'm with people. Happiness is when I'm with people. I've made it quite clear that I don't do alone very well. Where I'm drawing energy, when I'm laughing and bantering and being cheeky and pushing the limits. And it's, there's nothing better than sitting around, you know, with a beer in hand, talking to your mates and just, you know, just the pure, the simplicity of it. The simplicity of sitting around and having a good conversation, a few laughs, bit of sunshine. It's not...
Yeah. I think for you and for me and maybe a lot of people, I would hope for a lot of people. So you, when you're doing your thing, right, because you love empowering and coaching and helping, as do I, and when you're in front and you're sharing thoughts and ideas and inspiration with a group and you see like fucking light bulbs going off.
Yep.
And you see that, oh, you see that awakening and you see those heads nodding. Well, that's because you're living your purpose in that moment.
That's right.
Because that's you doing what you're meant, that's what you're born to do.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of people, you know, here's a word that really scares a lot of people. And tell me if you agree, Harps. And that is when people say, how well do you look after yourself spiritually? And people always draw it to, okay, it must have a religious flair or it must have some sort of meditation flair. Spirituality is really about understanding what your purpose is. It doesn't have to have all of the stigmatized flavors to it. Spirituality is understanding what you were put on this earth to do and what makes you tick. I mean, I've been doing this for 18 years. If I was going to get sick of it, if it was going to draw me down, if it was going to get boring, if it was going to get repetitive, monotonous, unfulfilling. But in 18 years, I can roll out a topic that I rolled out 18 years ago and still get the same feeling.
Mm.
You know? So that's my happiness. Yeah, definitely.
Now, here's a harder question.
Oh, God, okay, let me brace myself.
I want you to not be the bloody expert. I want you just to be the...
The vulnerable.
Just the vulnerable Anna.
All right.
What's happening in you? What's happening in you? Soul, spirit, emotion, mind, body. Yep. When you're happy.
You know what? I feel happiness. I feel it in, just above the stomach and below the rib cage. It's just like that's. It hits me physically. You know, and the automatic smile that comes on your face. I tend to speak a lot more quickly when I'm happy as well because I'm just getting that adrenal. It's definitely got something to do with adrenal, but you know, I feel it in my gut.
Yeah.
And I feel like what I'm doing today is just not a shelf product.
Mm.
What I'm doing, and I mean that in a broader holistic concept, right? What I'm doing today is I'm having the opportunity to change and potentially save lives.
Mm.
So the feeling, and you asked me what happens to me, I feel like a bloody great person. I feel necessary. That's the word. You know, I think importance too strong and all that sort of stuff. I feel necessary and needed. And you can probably intertwine those two words. And there's nothing better than feeling needed.
Well, we need you. Like a flower needs the rain.
Oh, darling, I'm the only guest that'll talk about my bowel movements, and I know how passionate you are about it.
No, I've spoken about shitting with a bunch of people. You're not special at all. I used to think that saying was when a flower needs Lorraine. That's what I thought. I used to ask Mum, who's Lorraine? She's like, what? I go, who's Lorraine? She goes, what? I go, in that saying, a flower needs Lorraine, who is she? She's like, it's the rain, you dickhead. I'm like,
It's like that Enya song. Remember that beautiful mystic song, you know, Sail Away?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to thought it was Save the Whales.
Well, it could be.
What a dickhead.
It could be. We grow up, again, generalising everyone. I feel like I need to put in all these fucking disclaimers these days. Fuck it. We grow up in a culture, and a pharinga, Onka pharinga, that tells us that, that, you know, kind of happiness comes from setting goals and achieving goals, right? But we also, well, that's part of it. That's what, like, none of us set a goal thinking that when we achieve the goal, we're going to be more miserable.
No.
We definitely think it's going to make our life better or us better. But you and I and Melissa and our listeners all know that sometimes we set a goal, we achieve the goal, and we're like, like the feeling that we thought we would have when we get to that place, it's not there. So we go, oh, maybe it wasn't 10 kilos. Maybe it's 12 kilos. Yeah, 12 kilos. And then we get there and we go, maybe it was 15 kilos. Or maybe it wasn't a sub 3-hour marathon. Maybe it was a 250 marathon. Or maybe it's not 100 grand. Maybe it's 150 grand.
Mm.
Or maybe it's not the 70-inch flat screen. It's the 85. Right? Tell us about that, just in your words, like that relationship, like wherever we are, whatever we have, wherever we want to, wherever we, whatever we're doing, there's like part of us, I think, often us humans, where it's not enough. Like there's this ever-present dissatisfaction where no matter what I've got, I want more. No matter what I earn, I want more. No matter what I look like, I'm not happy. What I weigh, it's not light enough or big enough if you're a bodybuilder. No matter what people think, it's not. No matter how many likes I get, it's not enough. And I'm in this, like not as much as I used to be, but I can get, you know, I remember the first time we got 10,000 listeners in a day, I'm fucking running around with my undies on my head out in Hampton Street punching the air. And now I'm like, because the number's the same, but the impact has changed and the problem's me. Tell us about that. No pressure.
Jeez. Well, I think it's the birthday present concept, right? You get given a present on your birthday and then 6 months or 2 weeks later, you're done playing with it. It's not interesting anymore. And that's why, you know, firstly, I don't think a lot of people have actually had a really good look at what actually makes them happy for a start. I mean, gosh, Harps, you and I work in the field of human development, right? And you asked me what makes me happy and you saw me sort of go, right? So it's not a learned concept, but it's definitely a concept where I think that we have a falsified version of what happiness is. And I think that then knocks on to goals that, you know, will make us relatively happy for a little while. I think that people are living in a world where their goals are being made for them rather than really thinking about what they really want. I think that we are subjected to what happiness should look like as opposed to what really makes us happy. So I think that, you know, and I think I've said I think a lot, but, you know, it's very, very hard, harder now than ever. Now that we have more access to more, you know, whether it's information, materialistic acquisitions, whatever it is that I think that a lot of us have lost track of what truly makes us happy and we're living by the guided the guided thumb of what happiness should look like. And that's why people are constantly getting disappointed.
It's because we're bought into the collective lie, right? In that, yeah. Like, we're literally taught when we grow up that success is about what you have and what you earn and what you earn and what you own and what you drive and what people think of you and what you look like and how great your marriage is. And like, that's what we're told. These are the KPIs of whether or not you're a successful or good human. And also another, like, you know, this is a stretch, but I'll come back to where we're at right now. But Gerber wrote a book, a famous book called The E-Myth. And one of the principles in his book was you can't work on the business while you're in the business, right?
Right.
So you can't be objective about the thing that you're in the middle of, essentially. And one of the things that's very hard for us humans to get our head around, because we are us and we live in our own mind, we live in our own thoughts, we live in our own beliefs and values, is it's very hard for us to recognize us because we are us, and to recognize our programming. And the thing is that all of us, like it or not, we've all been raised somewhere by someone in a certain culture, in a certain academic setting, in a certain religious setting, perhaps, certain sociological environments, certain physical environment, and certain conversations and, you know, experiences, millions of them. And then one day we wake up and now I'm me. And now I see the world the way I see the world because of where I've been, what I've done, and who I've interacted with. And then I believe the challenge then, and whether or not you're 17 listening to this or 77, is to recognize that how you think doesn't need to be the way you think.
Mm.
And to recognize that where you've been doesn't need to dictate who you are or who you become, right? Because our beliefs are largely a reflection of what we've done or what we've been told and taught and trained. But I meet so many people whose life is miserable, not because of situation or environment, but because of how they think.
Mm.
And that's not coming from a place of criticism. Actually, it's coming from self-awareness and from love, because I want to help people to help manage their mind. I want to help people. I want them to see, like, this is the irony. I have more faith in the people that I talk to quite often than they have in themselves, because they don't know their own potential.
No.
And some people, sadly, have grown up in an environment that is on a level gone, yeah, you are shit. You're no good. You're not pretty enough, smart enough, funny enough, good enough, whatever enough. And sadly, they believe that, you know?
I absolutely agree, but there's also a willing of an essence of acceptance, right? People are just happy to accept just that, right? And that could be, you know, someone that society would proclaim to be really successful, lots of money, good looking, whatever ridiculous tag you want to put on it, right? I know most of the people that I, well, a lot of, I've got to be careful here too, a lot of people that I work at what you would deem at a highly successful level are some of the most unhappiest people I've worked with.
We talk about that a bit.
You know, like it's, and what you're sort of tipping at is, you know, what is it? What is self-actualization? And again, that's a big term, but I think that people are in zombie mode. We're there, but we're not there. We're getting up. We've got, you know, most boxes are ticked, you know, I can get up and get out of bed and live and interact and, you know, work or not work or have a family, don't have a family, but I'm here, right? And that's just enough for some people. And so we tend to fall into a, you know, almost like a monotonous fog of, okay, well, this is just good enough. And is a life just being just good enough for oneself? And when I say that, I mean, without actually understanding what really makes you happy, is that good enough to live forever?
Do you think that people don't realize the power that they have to change their life? I'm not talking about necessarily change their address or change, but just to change their life experience. I feel like a lot of people get to a point where they go, like they resign themselves to the fact that my life's a 4 out of 10. That's just, you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm like, so much, champ. So much. Eyes to me. Listen the fuck up. Let's get busy.
Yeah.
Let's get busy. Like, and if someone's listening to this and you're in your fucking 60s and you feel like you haven't peaked yet, good for you. Fucking go do something. Like, I hate the way that we behave certain ways because we think we should behave that way at that age. It drives me, and I'm not saying that because I'm 57, it drives me nuts. It's like, why shouldn't, you know, if they're able and they're healthy enough, why shouldn't a 70-year-old start a business, build a website? Why shouldn't they? Why can't they go and do a degree? Why can't they learn to surf? Why can't they go running if their body can run? Why can't they get in the gym and build muscle and improve function and lower biological age and fucking improve cognitive function and improve memory and become better, literally better than they were when they were 65? Why not? Because nobody fucking tells them it's possible.
Well,
nobody encourages them. What?
They're stuck in the sandwich, right?
Fuck.
They're saying no and society's saying no.
It's right, because society, I fucking hate it.
Society sets the KPIs of where they think you should be at a certain period of time, life, age, gender, whatever it is. And because we've grown up in that world, there's actually it's like I'm right now, listeners, I'm putting both of my hands parallel and just drawing it down the screen. Is these things are moving together. So how can change ever happen? Like, there's not enough disruptors like you, Craig, out there for people to actually understand.
Mm.
That our thoughts can be our best friend or our worst enemies, and that we are in control of them if people learn how to do it.
It's time to rise up, brothers and sisters. It's time. It's time, motherfuckers. It's fucking time.
We should have a flag or...
Yeah, it's time. We need a personal revolution. No, we do. It's just like one of my favorite stories, I've told it maybe three times, so I'll give the 30-second version, is I once helped an old dude, God bless him, who started training with me when he was in his 80s, Anna. He'd never been in a gym. Like, it was, you know, and he was 80, I think he was 81 or 2, wheelchair bound, couldn't walk. He'd had multiple operations. He was well, in inverted commas. He was just really weak, but he was cancer free. He was all okay. And his daughter worked for me. And I said, bring him in and I'll train him. And because I was fascinated. And so he did his first ever workout in his 80s. And the quick version is, in 6 months, he went from not being able to walk to being able to walk with a frame and then walk with sticks and then walk with nothing. And he could walk for 2, 3, 4 Ks. He went from not being able to bench press a bar, which is 10 kilos, give or take, to bench pressing 40 kilos, maybe 45 kilos. His functional strength went through the roof. His mobility, his activities of daily living went through the roof. His happiness, his hormones changed. His blood profile changed. Like, this is an 81-year-old that just started doing something that nobody encouraged him to do or told him he could do, and he fucking revolutionized his body, not because of me, but because of he did the work, but he had a cheer squad. He had someone going, no, mate, you can actually do this. But most people would go, that's ridiculous, and they put old people in a fucking circle and kick balloons around. Fuck that. Give them all a dumbbell. Like, fuck. It fucking annoys me.
Like, Arthur used to complain about that exercise class.
Oh, fuck kicking balloons around in a circle. Get them up. Get some exercise specialists in. And God bless those people who volunteer and do that. I don't mean to be rude, but if that's all those people can do, then cool. That's perfect. But trust me, there are a lot of people kicking balloons who can do more.
Yep.
And we can even use that as a metaphor for other people with other challenges. If you're spending your life kicking balloons, sitting in a chair metaphorically, when you've got so much more fucking potential, then it's on you. It's on you. It's on you to get out of the chair, pop the fucking balloon, and go do something to learn and grow and evolve, because no one's going to send you a fucking personal invite. You know, there's not going to be an angel on the window tomorrow morning going, come on, Melissa, you can do it. Jesus sent me. I believe in you.
But that's the thing, Harps. I think a lot of people are waiting for it to be gifted.
And this is the problem. We want someone to fix us.
Yeah.
We want a solution. We want a pill, a powder, a potion. And the uncomfortable truth is it always comes back to you, because the only person who can have a good attitude for you is you. The only person who can get out of bed for you is you. The only person who can lift the weights, do the walk, open the business, do the course, be resilient for you is you. So it doesn't matter who you talk to. It doesn't matter. You can listen to all of my fucking podcasts and then do nothing, or you can listen to my podcast, I'm Not the Answer, Anna's Not the Answer, Melissa's Not the Answer. We're just all resources. Some people would call me a tool. I don't blame you. We're just all resources to help people, but ultimately people need to help themselves, and that's me included, you know? I feel like I just stepped on my soapbox, Anna.
That's okay, mate. You can step on your soapbox.
All right, let's just wind this little... extravaganza up. How do people find you and connect with you, Anna?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, if you any type of organization, any kind of sector, any type of industry, if you're looking for support in getting people to be happier and healthier in the mental health space, that's my gig. You can find me at www.annafaringa.com.au. You can also just search Anna Faringa on LinkedIn. And you can find me there. The beautiful Caroline will probably respond to you if you want to know more. And I just wanted to use this couple of seconds to say, look, I want to draw it back to it's not a nice to have anymore. It's becoming a must have. So get ahead of the game. If you have to do it for a ticker box purpose, so what? Because in the process, you're going to save some jobs, save some lives, and make some workers pretty bloody happy and safe.
Hear, hear.
Here, here.
Well, we appreciate you. Stay on the call. Thank you for being on our little humble show over here at TYP Central. As always, good value. Have you been getting the checks we've been sending, or?
There's a problem, mate. That's a pandemic in Australia Post are backlogged.
Right, right. Well, they'll get, yeah, look, stand by. Just keep checking the mailbox. Thanks, everyone. Love you guts.
Thanks, everyone.